Blog Talk Radio.
How was your weekend? Short week this week. Got a holiday here on Thursday. I'm not sure yet if the schedule this week is just a show today and tomorrow, or if it's today, tomorrow, Wednesday. I'll let you know ASAP. But yeah, short week. A lot of stuff to get to. A lot of interesting news. I'll give you a little run through real quick. Here's what you have to look forward to. We got the Pew Research Center did a very detailed poll on what Americans think about their government and how much they're worried about corruption. And I want to give you a substantive breakdown here. There's so much to get to that what I did is I took what I thought were like the four most important sections, and we're going to break those down. There's some counterintuitive stuff here. There's some, I don't know, I guess I'd call them misnomers among the American people. So I want to really fully explain what goes into their responses and how we can hopefully try to get everybody on track in terms of identifying the problem in American politics, which I think everybody who listens to this show knows already pretty well. Also, Rush Limbaugh goes on Fox News Sunday because Rush Limbaugh is a totally serious guy that you need to hear his opinion, and he says stupid stuff. What else is new? We have a DNC ad that attacks the Republican candidates on the issue of Islam. Is it fair, yes or no? You may be a little surprised about my response to that one. And later on, Carly Fiorina throws out some casual bigotry against atheists. Stay classy. And Donald Trump now apparently not even hiding the fact that he's fond of neo-Nazi propaganda. That sounds like a bold claim, but, you know, unless you live under a rock, if you go to any news website, you probably saw this weekend that that story blew up. Twitter was going in on that one, let's say. All right, so let's get started here, and we'll kick it off with this interesting survey, which has a lot of consequences to it. Pew Research did a very detailed poll on what Americans feel about their government. And I want to run through some of the facts with you and discuss it. So first of all, we have the frustration level. So only 18% of Americans are generally content right now. Only 18%. So that's basically like the favorability rating for the federal government. Now, that's actually overall higher than Congress, which usually Congress ranges anywhere from like 7% to 22%. So it's at like the upper, realm of that there. 57% say they're frustrated, 22% say they're angry, and only the three other years since 1997 have been worse than that. So that's something to think about. Since 1997, only three other years people have been more frustrated with government. I think one was 2011 and 2013, and then I forget the other one. They say the top 10 biggest problems with the federal government, when you ask the American people, number one is Congress. So people look at Congress and they say, wow, you guys suck. You guys never get anything done. You never get along. There's no bipartisanship. The second thing they say the biggest problem with the federal government is just feel like the federal government plays politics on every issue. The third thing is interesting. It says government's role too big. I'm going to come back to that a little bit later because we got a separate graphic on that that's something similar. They say the fourth biggest issue with the federal government is corruption. The fifth is debt. The sixth is the economy. The seventh is healthcare. The eighth is immigration. The ninth is nothing gets done. The tenth is money and corporate influence. Now, I find this one interesting because there's a lot of confusion. So when people say, hey, I hate Congress, and I hate that they play politics all the time, Like, all of the problems that are on this list can be connected to money and politics and can be connected to corruption. The fact that they have corruption as one thing and then money, comma, corporate influence as a totally separate thing here shows that the pollsters kind of did a poor job putting this together because, again, that's one and the same. There's no distinction there. There's no difference. It's this exact same thing. But people respond for whatever reason, saying corruption is the fourth biggest issue, money and corporate influence is the tenth. And their number one thing that they're frustrated at, Congress, the number one thing that they care about in the federal government where the people say that's broken, Congress, why is it broken? Well, motherfucker, it's broken because of money and politics. It's broken because of corruption. So we need to fix that in order to address everything else on the list. And this is one of the areas where the media has failed us tremendously, because it's the job of the media to educate the American people so the American people know exactly how to diagnose and understand and comprehend all the problems that we're dealing with, but they don't do that. So then it's up to your average American to just go based off of their gut feeling as to what they think the problem is and how they can fix it. And all these guys, they don't have a degree in journalism. They don't have a degree in political science. They don't know all the ins and outs and nuances of economics. So how can you expect somebody to go, I can tell you exactly in great detail how the problem, came about at the federal level in the government? All right, let's look at the next one here. This is views of the government, smaller versus bigger. So what percentage of the American people want a smaller government with fewer services, and what percentage want a bigger government with more services? So this is one of the ones where I guarantee you the right is going to take a victory lap on this. In fact, I'm on the verge of making a prediction that Bill O'Reilly is going to bring this up in his talking points memo the next time he does a show, which I don't know, maybe tonight. He's going to say, oh, see, the American people, end of conversation, 53% want smaller government with fewer services, only 38% bigger government. It's over. Republicans are right. Democrats are wrong. But see, the problem with that is it's so broad and so vague and so general as to be wholly meaningless. So if you ask somebody like me, and I'm obviously categorized in America as somebody on the left, if you ask me and say, hey, do you want bigger government or smaller government? My response would be, I don't know. Give me a specific area of government, and then I'll tell you. So if you talk about the military, I want smaller. Talk about the NSA, I want smaller. Talk about prostitution, gambling, drug laws, I want smaller, 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 smaller. But if you talk about healthcare, I want bigger. You talk about the social safety net, I want bigger. You talk about corporate welfare, I want smaller. That's such a nuanced thing that you can't just have people say, I want it bigger, I want it smaller. Because that's not rational. That doesn't make sense. And also, I'm not surprised that more people say smaller when they see the fact that the federal government is broken. So, a gut reaction to a lot of people, if they don't know political science terms and theory, they say, I don't know, just make it smaller and that'll get rid of the problem. Well, no, you could have a smaller government that's, super corrupt as well. The real problem is corruption. I keep coming back to that point. All right, and then finally, this is the one that's the most telling, which shows you that even though people are not well educated on this issue, their gut feeling is correct. Again, I just wish the media would come in here and connect the dots further for them so they can vocalize better and more accurately how they feel. But it says about three-quarters of the American people, 76% to be exact, say that government is run by big interests. Now, what percentage say that the government is run for the benefit of all people? Just 19%. Only 19% of the American people in a democracy say that the government is being run for the benefit of all people. 19%. Isn't that fucking unreal? But what's incredible is that, that 19% is probably even inflated. Because we've discussed the Princeton research before on the show, which proved that the U.S. Effectively, keyword, functions as an oligarchy. Because what the poor and the middle class want in terms of policy direction of the country, we never get. There's no correlation between what we want and what's actually implemented. Where there is a perfect correlation is with the rich. Whatever the rich want, they get. So we effectively have a government that in no way, shape, or form represents the interests or, as they put it, the benefit of all people. Somehow we got 19% saying, yeah, no, that's what it is. So there's your breakdown, man. The American people, they already have this gut feeling that's correct, okay? But it really is up to the media to do their goddamn job and to explain, okay, let me tell you exactly how this works. So when politicians run for office, the lobbyists step up and they give them money in order to get them elected. And then when they get in office, now you have, you know, you're not a free person representing your constituents. There are strings attached, and now you have to represent the people that just gave you the money. And by the way, in Congress, over 90% of the time, the people who raise the most money end up getting elected. So this is why it's a corporatocracy or it's an oligarchy. And when you finally explain it to people, their gut reaction, you know, you get that effect where they go, oh, okay, so I'm right. So my initial feeling was correct. The evidence backs it up. And then we can more effectively combat the problem. And the way to do that is, of course, through Wolfpack and through Move to Amend. And I would argue that the best solution is a constitutional amendment. Because when it comes to, you can pass a law, and a law can be repealed, a law can be ignored, you know, a law can just, you know, just like the anti-monopoly laws, stay on the books, but nothing happens. So there's a million ways it could go wrong if you go the legal route, plus you're not going to get that through Congress anyway. So you got to go around Congress. You got to go state by state and get a constitutional amendment to get money out of the political system, and then watch how quickly the government starts representing you and me much more. You know, that's the other part of this that's vitally important. We don't know what it's like to live in a country where the government represents us more now. We don't, because they haven't been doing it. I mean, what, the 1978, was it, the first Supreme Court case that said money is basically free speech, that started chipping away at this foundation? And then you had a variety of court cases after that, including McCutcheon and Citizens United recently, which said, yeah, no, money does equal free speech, so billionaires can buy the political system, and that's it. So we haven't had a government that represents us in any way since fucking 1978, 1980, or at least they haven't represented us effectively. I mean, in a democracy, we don't even have 15% of what we want become law. It just doesn't happen. If it ever does happen that we get something that we want, it's not because you and I want it, it's because other moneyed interests happen to align with us. You know, I'm just saying, the perfect example of that was these recent laws on net neutrality. Not laws, because they weren't laws, they were just rules on net neutrality. And the only reason we were able to get that is you had some major corporations that are big money donors and big players in American politics, they happen to agree with us. They happen to say, okay, yeah, no, we want to keep the internet the way it is because a lot of investment banks had money in these smaller startup internet companies and they didn't want to see their investments tanked. So that, like, the bigger companies, whatever it was, I forget the ones that were against it, Viacom and Time Warner or whatever, they ended up losing, but that's not because for any democratic reason. They lost because companies like Google came out against them and Wall Street came out against them. So even when we win, it's not because we, you know, it's what we want, and that ends up getting implemented. Okay. Now, let me switch gears here and move along to a Republican congresswoman making an ass of herself going after Obama. Republican Congresswoman Ann Wagner attacked Obama because he dared to stand up for refugees. Let's listen.
Here's what disgusts me. I got to tell you what, Jamie, and this is just, you know, early morning me here, but I thought what the president did earlier in his press conference this week was an absolute disgrace. He decided to pick a fight and stand up for ISIS and stand up against the side of freedom and to pick a fight with not just Republicans but Democrats over this refugee issue. It is a politicization. It is a deflecting measure.
That's unreal. Obama decided to pick a fight for ISIS and stand up for ISIS because he dares to want to take some emphasis on that word, Syrian refugees. Standing up for ISIS, wait a second. There's been, for the past week or so, a bunch of people have been talking about the fact that one of the goals of ISIS is to destroy what they call the gray zone between Westerners and Muslims, where there are Muslims who are assimilated and they're Western in their identity as well, but the idea is they want to drive a wedge between that and make it so that the West totally turns against all Muslims, and then the Muslims are going, well, where are we going to go? And ISIS steps in, fills that gap, fills that void, and says, look, even though you don't like us, we're going to fucking protect you because those big, bad, evil Westerners have rejected you fully. And aren't they everything that we said they were from day one? Aren't they that bad and that evil and that wrong? So, if anything, who is really defending ISIS here? Now, obviously, I'm not saying that that's your intent, but, you know, George W. Bush ended up helping the monstrosity of ISIS by breaking the Middle East, breaking Iraq, getting rid of the stabilizing force, which was Saddam Hussein, the dictator, and de-bathifying the government, pissing off the Sunni population. ISIS rose up. It was because of his actions. Did he necessarily want that to happen? Of course not. But it did happen as a result of his bad ideas. And this is the same shit that we're seeing here. Obama's standing up for ISIS because he's daring to say, hey, let's take in some Syrian refugees. This isn't like a reasonable debate we're having in America. It's not like we're having a discussion where the Republicans say, okay, look, we only want to take 5,000 Syrian refugees for whatever reason, a variety of reasons. Well, we had problems with refugees in 2011 or 2009, which is true, by the way, and limited resources, whatever. You come up with whatever excuse you want. Okay, that's a fair position. I don't necessarily agree with it. I would go higher than that. But at least you're sitting at the table, and the Democrats can say, no, we want 30,000 Syrian refugees. What the Republicans are saying is zero, none, zip, nada, end of conversation. And Obama's saying, I think the number is from Syria specifically, just 10,000. He's like, okay, 10,000. Germany's taking 800,000. France, that just got attacked, not by Syrian refugees for the record, at least none of that we know of yet, but they're like, okay, bring in 30,000 refugees. The Republicans are like, zero. We want zero. Guys, this isn't a reasonable conversation that we're having. I mean, the vetting process in the U.S. is impeccable, where I think it takes on average 1 year or 2 years to get here. We covered all the details of it on the show last week. But there's multiple high-level security background checks. The FBI gets involved. Other government agencies, they have extensive interviews with the Department of Homeland Security. I mean, the only thing missing in this long chain of vetting is literally somebody on the ground in Syria, which is a war zone, like, you know, vetting on the ground there, trying to scope out what's happening and who's on what side, and hey, what's your background like, what's your family life like? And a lot of people we've taken in are women, children, and senior citizen age men. They're like, nope, nobody. And then these are also the people that'll turn around and say, family values, moral values, I'm the most Christian motherfucker that there is on planet Earth, except when it comes time to actually practice that ideology, then I'm gone. Then, you know, fuck, Jesus who? I never, Jesus you talking about? You know, I know a Jesus, I don't know a Jesus, I don't know, who's that? And then the last thing I want to mention real fast is she threw in the word freedom. Like the Democrat, anti-freedom, Obama's anti-freedom for wanting to bring in some Syrian refugees. What the fuck does that have to do with freedom? No, like, now the Republican trick is, since they have no substance to anything that they say, just word salad. You know, word salad of things that are concepts that we all agree with, or say we agree with, but it has no relevance to this conversation. Oh, you want to bring in some Syrian refugees to make sure that they don't die in a war that they don't want nothing to do with? You're fucking anti-freedom. The fuck are you saying? No, you know who is anti-freedom? These guys. You are. Ann Wagner. Are you in favor of legalizing all drugs? No. Okay, you're anti-freedom. Are you in favor of a woman making whatever choice she wants with her own body? No. Okay, so you're anti-freedom. Are you in favor of legalized prostitution? No, you're anti-freedom. Legalized gambling? No, you're anti-freedom. Need I continue? No, it's just a word that they throw around. There's no substance connected to it. And obviously, the attacks on Obama are just fling mud. That's it. And again, so when she says Obama is standing up for ISIS, helping ISIS. Okay, is there an argument that Obama has helped ISIS? Sure. But how does that argument go? It goes a little something like this. You're doing military interventions in 7 different countries. You bombed so many civilians. The drone strike rate fails 90% of the time. You get the wrong people. 90%! You're going to kill civilians, create further radicalization, make more terrorists, and therefore you're helping ISIS even though you're not necessarily trying to. There's the argument. But even when she gets the first part right of like, okay, his policies might be helping ISIS, what does she say the reason is? Because you want to let in a few Syrian grandmothers and children and women. No, on that one, you guys would definitely be helping ISIS by rejecting everybody. Okay. One more here. Blah, 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 blah. Rush Limbaugh we'll go to. All right. Where's my clip? Rush Limbaugh went on Fox News Sunday because Fox News considers him a serious human being. Let's listen to him go after Democrats.
He's not serious, Chris. I mean, there are legitimate questions about what and who he thinks pose threats to this country and who our real enemies are. And I'm sorry, the American people is looking at latest polling data. He's got his worst marks ever on dealing with terrorism. People are scared. We've got these refugees coming in, and nobody's confident that we can vet them. And yet we're told, don't be a bigot. Don't be a racist. Don't be a xenophobe. We're none of those things, and nobody who's worried about this is. They love America. They're concerned about our security. They don't think this administration is, or at least they're not seeing any signs of it. It's really troubling. I'm having to bite my lip here when I really think. I think we are a great nation at risk in a dangerous world, and the people leading the country today don't see that. They see us as the problem, not the solution. They think that we are responsible for some of these problems. They'll fall back and blame George W. Bush for what's going on. ISIS didn't exist when Bush left office.
Totally not true. If he knew anything about the history of the region or the history of the war, he would know that. But he's a political know-nothing who does no research, so he goes out there and says ignorant shit like that. No, ISIS beforehand, started in the 1990s, and they went under the banner Al-Qaeda in Iraq. Now, for anybody who knows the history of the war, they know that there was no Al-Qaeda in Iraq until you took out Saddam Hussein. Then there were plenty of Al-Qaeda in Iraq. So Al-Qaeda in Iraq, eventually, there was, of course, the split between Al-Qaeda and ISIS. ISIS became its own thing. But the birth of it was Al-Qaeda in Iraq, which wasn't a fucking issue until George W. Bush and the neocons took out Saddam Hussein, who, of course, was the stabilizing force in the region. That's not to say he's a good guy, but he is a Ba'athist, which is, he was a dictator, but it was a pseudo-socialist political philosophy where he's the strong man. And any kind of fundamentalism that rears its ugly head, Saddam Hussein would immediately view that as a threat to his own power. So what would he do? He would fucking crush it. He would crush it, which is why, under him, there was no Al-Qaeda in Iraq. Then we went in there, toppled him, de-Ba'athified the government, got rid of everybody in the Ba'athist Party, which pissed off the entire Sunni population, because it was the Sunni Ba'athist Party. And then what happened? All those people teamed up with the fundamentalist Sunnis because they had a common enemy in the Shia government. Maliki was the head of Iraq. So there you have it. And there are plenty of articles which go into great detail discussing how ISIS would not be successful if not for Saddam's former Ba'athist generals and spies who teamed up with the religious fundamentalists to take over territory. hey, guys, I don't know if you know this. Religious fundamentalists are typically dingbats. So they don't know how to do something like a military takeover of more territory and hold it down and occupy it. You know who does know how to do that? Former army people. So there are letters of one of Saddam's former top guys who he teamed up with ISIS, and he actually writes in his diary, I don't believe in these guys' religion. I think that these guys are extreme, they're crazy, they're true Kool-Aid drinkers and believers, and I'm not with them, I'm just using them to ride my way back into power. And once I get back in power, I'm going to turn on these motherfuckers. This is the problem, is that when you meddle in a region and you micromanage everything and you don't understand the history, you don't understand the different political ideologies there, you don't understand the sectarian violence and the fact that they're Sunni and Shia, well, you go in there and you hit it with a fucking sledgehammer, and then of course there's going to be a monstrosity that rises up out of it. And furthermore, Iraq was created by the West. We drew the fucking borders and we gave it them independence in like the 1930s or some shit. And what happens when you create a fake country? You're going to need a strong man to lead it because they don't want to coexist together. The Kurds didn't want to coexist with the other Sunnis, and they didn't want to coexist with the Shias, so it's three separate countries in one country. We drew the borders so that we could take the oil and fucking exploit it. Again, so, and look at the way that he framed that. He's like, you know, these Democrats, they think that the West is to blame for some of these problems. He said the word some. So what are you saying? We're to blame for none of this? None of this. None of this. Now, I'm not saying we're to blame for all of it. Of course not. The ideology of Wahhabism and Salafism is something that exists without U.S. imperialism. We made it more popular because it turns out that when you start slaughtering civilians and fucking with a country, people are going to turn to the most extreme people in that country. But we're not blaming for all the problem. The ideology exists in the first place, and that's their own issue. Okay? But this idea that we have nothing to blame, and definitely don't blame George Bush. ISIS didn't exist before George Bush. You know, they weren't there when he was there. So what's the implication? What's he getting at? He's trying to say, I mean, come on. It was the serious Republicans who were able to handle Iraq. And then the problem was Obama. When Obama decided I'm going to withdraw out of some places in Iraq. And, you know, so what did you want, Rush? What's your argument? Occupy forever? Because, hey, then there will be no vacuum for bad people to fill. No, the problem was you created the fucking vacuum in the first place. If you didn't create the vacuum, then the situation wouldn't be like it is today, and you can't argue against that. And now, unfortunately, of course the region's going to go to shit when you pull out, but you got to pull off that Band-Aid fast, man. Okay, it's going to happen. There's going to be a problem whether we leave now, 30 years from now, 112 years from now. It's going to go to shit when we leave. So, all right, and by the way, I'm not implying that it was good while we're there. Of course it wasn't. It's horrific when we're there as well. But do you have the monstrosity rise up even more? Yes, but now you've already made your bed. You got to fucking sleep in it, prick. And that's the thing, is he just wants to blame Obama. He just wants to blame the Democrats. He thinks it's that simple. He thinks, you know, oh, what are some of the other things he said? We've got refugees coming in here. Germany's taking 800,000. France just said we're going to take another 30,000 refugees. From Syria, how many are we taking? 10,000. He's like, oh, it's good, 10,000. The Republicans say take none. The Democrats, ooh, bold Democrats, 10,000. He's like, oh my God, we got refugees pouring in here. All three of them? Like, what are you saying? You have no clue what the fuck it's like. Europe, they have many more refugees than we have, and you're bitching about what it's like here. And when he says nobody's confident, we'll vet them. Well, then you're just an ignorant fuck, yet again, to my main point. Because we went over the details of that last week, where I told you it's a multi-step process. It takes a few years to complete. Interviews from the Department of Homeland Security, biometric screening, the FBI gets involved, multiple government agencies do background checks. See, you say that because you don't know what the fuck you're talking about. But that's Rush Limbaugh for you. He doesn't need evidence. He doesn't need data. He doesn't need to read. He doesn't need to learn. Just go out there and blame the Democrats. Well, this is why your ratings suck now and you're a joke. Because in the age of the internet, everybody can listen to what you say and then look up whether you're right or wrong, and you're almost always dead wrong. All right. Let me take a break. When we come back, I'm going to get into the DNC ad against the Republicans with a surprising take on that. And then later on, just how insecure is ISIS, I should say. Ugh, they're really insecure. You'll see what I mean. All right, son of a bitch, we're back, y'all. Let's get into this DNC ad, which I have a take on that might surprise some of you. The DNC released an ad against the Republican candidates. Let's take a look, and then I want to break it down.
We are at war with radical Islam.
Radical Islamic terrorism.
You do have a problem with radical Muslims.
Radical Islamic jihadists.
Radical Islamic terrorism. We do not fight against Islam. We fight against evil.
The war against terrorism is not a war against Muslims. Nor is it a war against Arabs. It's a war against evil people who conduct crimes against innocent people. That's not what Islam is all about. Islam is peace.
All right, so, and by the way, there was something on screen there. You guys couldn't, since you're listening to the live show, you couldn't see it, but it said, equating Islam, all Muslims with terrorism, and then it goes on to say that's wrong, and then they show that about George Bush, and they're like, oh, look, Bush was more liberal. So there was some writing on the screen there that you couldn't see, okay? But it said equating Islam, all Muslims with terrorism. I don't think that's fair. I don't think that ad is fair at all, and by the way, the internet overwhelmingly agrees with me on this if you look at the like-to-dislike ratio. Not that that's the end-all be-all, but like 20% like rate, 80% dislike rate, and there's a pretty good reason why that's the case. Now, do I understand where the Democrats are coming from when they want to call it jihadism or they want to call it something else? Jihadism is the one they use in the debate recently. Sometimes they say violent extremism, which I think is goofy and I think does miss the point. But they're doing that because they want to have the Kurds, for example, and the Shia militias, and our other Sunni allies in the region, like Turkey and Saudi Arabia. They want to have them on our side, so they don't want to alienate them by mocking Islam, which is a defining feature of who they are, yada, yada. That's their reasoning for it, okay? But I don't agree with that. I don't agree with their reasoning, because you've gone too far when you act like even the Republican candidates there, who, by the way, are almost all actual bigots, so let's be clear about that, but when they say radical Islam, we're waging a war on radical Islam, and you say, why did you just say we're waging a war on Islam? Why did you say we're waging a war on all Muslims? They didn't say that. They said radical Islam. See, you can't, you have to be accurate in your description of what they're saying. And again, this is with me acknowledging, as I have probably every day on the show for years now, that these guys are all bigots, okay? But with that being said, in this case, they're not being bigoted. They're not saying we're waging a war on Islam. They're not saying we're waging a war on Muslims. If they said that, I'd be the first one out here to say, that's stupid, that's dumb, that's wrong, that's counterproductive, that's immoral, and you're the bad guy. When Ben Carson said Muslims shouldn't be president, I came out here and said, oh, okay, then that's a bigoted comment, you're wrong, that's unconstitutional, that's unbelievable you'd say that, and I went in because he actually did say that. In this case, you're showing clips to the Republicans saying, you know, we need to fight radical Islam, and then you guys are saying, why did you just say we need to fight a war on Islam? They didn't say Islam, they said radical Islam. Don't pretend like that first word doesn't exist, because that's the same as saying, you know, we're in a war against fundamentalist Islam, okay? And also, let's remember here, when we talk about a war against radical Islam or fundamentalist Islam, it varies candidate to candidate what exactly they mean when they say that. So if they're talking about a military war and a ground invasion, of course I oppose that. I speak out against that all the time. But if they're just talking about a war in the realm of ideas and in the realm of concepts, I actually would go further than just saying, let's wage a war on radical Islam. Let's wage a war in the realm of ideas on Islam, because Islam is a religion. It's a dogmatic ideology, just like Christianity, just like any other religion. And dogmatism is a problem in and of itself. Anytime you look at one book and say, my life philosophy comes from that, and that's the end of the conversation, that's stupid. I'm against that. I'm going to say that you shouldn't just base it on that, and you should base it on a variety of things. And if we're talking about a war of ideas, not only am I in that war, I like to think I'm leading the battle in that war, and in no way, shape, or form can anybody misconstrue that with bigotry, because it's not. It's a war of ideas and accuracy, where I'm saying, that's not true, that's not true, here's why that's not true, here's why that's stupid, and you could go on and list a trillion things there. So the reason why people don't like this ad is because you're not saying what they're saying. You're assuming that they're saying something that they didn't say. When they say, hey, war on radical Islam, they're not saying war on Islam or war on all Muslims. You just made it up. And the thing that annoys me about this is it makes it look like you don't have other arguments against them when you do. So, like, you know, Jeb Bush recently said, I'm keeping Guantanamo open. Ben Carson and Donald Trump said, I'm going to continue to torture. You know, Marco Rubio said, ground troops now. And I think Jeb Bush also said, ground troops. So, okay, why not take out the clip of them saying, ground troops in Syria, and then you run ahead saying, this the kind of direction, so you want to do the Iraq war quagmire all over again, where we waste our lives, we waste our money, and the situation is worse off than when we went in there. That's, you run an ad against that, run an ad against the torture, run an ad against an actual war. Instead, you took them saying something totally benign, that, hey, we're against radical Islam, and you're like, oh, why did you just say that we're against all Muslims? They didn't say that. I have no love for any of these candidates. Anybody who listens to the show knows that. But if you're going to argue against them, you've got to do it accurately. You can't just use any argument and assume good enough because they're bad people. No, they are bad people, but you got to use good arguments against them. You got to say, hey, policy X, Y, and Z is wrong, and here's why. And there's so much, there's a wealth of information there in the first place that you can attack. Their policy proposals are fucking ludicrous and stupid. Why not run an accurate ad against those? But you didn't do it. You misconstrued their language and you screwed it up. Okay. All right, let's go to some real bigotry here. Governor is doing everything in his power to screw over Syrian refugees, addicting info reports. Texas Governor Greg Abbott sent a letter to the Health and Human Services Commission and the Department of Public Safety, directing them to inform all local volunteer agencies and organizations to not provide any aid to Syrian refugees in need of help. The letter could affect programs at organizations like Interfaith Ministries, Catholic Charities, and YMCA International Services, along with many others. They continue, while the Texas governor maintains that his state will not take in any more refugees, there are still more than 210 that have been living there for the last 14 months. Even though there have been absolutely no links to terror attacks from these refugees, he wants to cut off private sources of help, so not just government, private sources of help. The only way he will foreseeably get away with it is because the state doesn't have to accept federal funding for the organizations that choose not to go along with his scheme. That's the kicker. Even though they are private, they do live off grants. He's hoping that by cutting off aid sources, private ones, at that, Syrian refugees will choose to go to other states instead. Oh boy. Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. So look at this move. This is an incredible move. He's like, all right, not only do we not want to take refugees, which he doesn't have the authority to say that. This is a federal government policy, not a state policy. But he's saying, in order to enforce this, very simple. I'm just going to say, hey, private charities, you can't even help them. And in order to hammer that home, he's just going to reject the grants that come for the private charities through him from the federal government. Oh, man. Oh, that's low. And think about it. Oftentimes Republicans say, it's not that we're against charity. It's that we're against the government doing it. So that's why Republicans say we're against, you know, social safety net programs. But here they're going further and they're saying, no, I'm just against charity. It's not just that I'm against the government doing anti-poverty programs. I'm also against an anti-poverty program in principle when it applies to those brown people, when it applies to Syrian refugees. Oh, man. And these are the guys, yet again, Greg Abbott, uber-Christian is what he is. These are the guys who claim, oh, my God, Jesus died on the cross. He loves you so much. He loves me so much. I believe in him so much. Except when it comes to actually trying to implement his philosophy to give a shit about the downtrodden. Then he's like, fuck them. They might be terrorists because I think they're Muslim. Unreal, man. Unreal. Even private charities, he's trying to say, no funding. Don't help any Syrian refugees. And we just described, man, there have already been some living there, no incidents whatsoever. And the U.S. vetting process is impeccable. How many times have we said this? It was, I believe, in the late, it was like 2009 or 2010, I believe it was. There was a case of Iraqi refugees that we let in, and then in Kentucky, it turns out they had links to Al-Qaeda. So we busted them, and then we put a hold on refugees for a while we set up a vetting process. After we set up that vetting process, now there's a long waiting period and there's multiple layers of vetting and an interview with the Department of Homeland Security and biometric screening and a trillion things. So they're so incredibly thoroughly vetted that it would be astounding if any of them are actually terrorists now. But even with the vetting and the multiple layers of security and the fact that they've been there for a while and haven't done anything to anybody, he's still saying, not only do I not want you getting government help, I don't even want private charities helping you, and I'm going to kneecap the private charities, and I'm going to put my middle finger up to you to try to get you out of Texas by any means necessary, because Jesus. These guys, I mean, look, to put it simply, they are just bad people. Next. All right, now let's laugh a little bit. Somehow I'm going to get you to laugh at ISIS, believe it or not. There's a hilarious story in Huffington Post that reminds us just how stupid and insecure ISIS really is. So they say the following, quote, in 2008, back when it was called Al-Qaeda in Iraq, the group placed a ban on women purchasing cucumbers. Can you guess why? Reuters shared that detail with the world in an August 2008 report on Iraqis turning against Al-Qaeda in Iraq because of the way it ruled over them. A Sunni tribal leader said this, they regarded the cucumber as male and tomato as female. Women were not allowed to buy cucumbers, only men. Reuters and other analysts said the cucumber rule was rooted in the extremist view that the nourishing vegetable is too sexually suggestive for women to safely handle. Oh, come on. That may be the saddest thing I've ever read in my life. These awkward creeper losers in the desert trying to implement the savage, barbaric, backwards-ass ideology are insecure little jealous pricks. They see a woman with a cucumber, they're like, we must put a stop to this. I know I can't please her like the cucumber can. Ban the cucumber. Take it away from her now. Oh, that's so weird and so sad and so transparent. We see right through you, dude. Could you imagine this conversation happening in the West between a husband and a wife? Where the guy's like, you know, Terry, come here, sit down, let's have a conversation. I don't like it when you go and you buy the phallic vegetables, because then how am I supposed to know what you're doing with said phallic vegetables when I'm at work trying to provide for you and the kids? Goodness gracious, let me tell you. This feeds into every negative point ever made about ISIS and who they are and what they represent. And, you know, the main thing is, guys, they're pathetic punk bitches. Like, and they think they're macho. I'm macho, yeah. Look at me with my big gun. I'm not overcompensating for my tiny penis. And, oh, yeah, look at me. I can hold territory even though I can. I need the Baathist generals to come help me with that because I'm a fucking moron. But aren't I so macho and aren't I so moral? And aren't I such a strong man? Hey, put that cucumber down. It's way bigger than my dick. I can't have that. What? What? Oh. And even to the point of, you know, they think this is moral. Like, I'm standing up for morality. That's what I'm doing. You're standing up for the most perverse system of morality that was concocted thousands of years ago in the desert, and you're looking at that as, no, I think it's true because it was fucking drilled in my head when I was a baby, and, you know, it's totally accurate, and that's why I'm following it. Well, no, just because it was drilled in your head doesn't mean it's true. Any actual objective view of what you're trying to implement, it's Dr. Seuss makes more sense than that. Green Eggs and Ham is more accurate than this shit. Narnia, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe makes more sense than that. For fuck's sake, man, read some of the literal things that are in there. The fact that you believe them speaks very poorly of your intelligence, as does the cucumber thing, but bright yellow cows, Muhammad going to heaven on a winged, I love this one, wait for it, everybody says winged horse, not true. The literal word in there, according to my friend who's a former Islamist who had to read this stuff every day all the time, winged donkey. On that alone, I would never subscribe to that religion. That's your goofy-ass prophet? Your prophet? I'm going to heaven now. Where's my donkey with wings? Oh! Oh my God, that's so sad. It would have been more manly if he fucking went to heaven on a gnat or a mosquito. Oh, that's so sad. Who does that? But they read this. Nailed it. This is true. We're going to live by this. Put down the fucking cucumber. I told you. You're only going to use fruit and vegetables that don't look like dicks, goddammit. No more bananas either. All right. All right, let's take a break here. And then when we come back, I love how when I'm in the middle of a rant, sometimes I just spit. Spit just flies out of my mouth. I'm like, what the fuck? That just happened. Actually, let me not take a break now. Let me do one more. uno mas, uno noche, in the words of, what's their name again? 98 Degrees. In the words of 98 Degrees, give me just one night, uno noche. All right, let's go after Carly Fiorina for going after atheists. Carly Fiorina was at a religious event with all the other Republican candidates, and she hit us with some casual bigotry.
All of the people in this church are people who care deeply about our nation, who love our nation, and are people of faith who love our God as well. And we started this conversation by talking about what's at stake for our nation. What's the greatest moral challenge of our nation? And I do think it's worth saying that people of faith make better leaders. Because faith gives us humility. Faith teaches us that no one of us is greater than any other one of us, that each of us are gifted by God. Faith gives us empathy. We know that all of us can fall, and every one of us can be redeemed. And faith gives us optimism. It gives us the belief that there is something better, that there is someone bigger than all of us. And so I think it's important that we elect the leader of faith and that we elect a leader as well who knows that more prayer, not less, is necessary in public life and in all our lives.
All right. I have so much to say about that. First of all, the faux concerned tone. This has always gotten under my skin about Carly Fiorina. I'm not sure anybody else speaks about this. The way she talks is fucking insufferable. Because it's always like she acts like the word she's saying, this is very heavy and very serious, and I'm very concerned about all this, and I'm going to speak in this way that's very... It's like dramatic acting. And every time she talks, it's like that, which has this look on her face like, I'm going into the zone with my dramatic conversation and points here. It should be noted that religious people are great. Man, atheists suck. Can you talk like a human? I don't get it. And it's, you know, Ted Cruz does a version of this, but he does the more sleazy, smarmy politician way of talking, as does Marco Rubio, as does Martin O'Malley, too, by the way. So just to be clear, this is a bipartisan thing. But yeah, and I think that we should balance the budget, and I think that I'm going to hold my pose with my finger like this. I'm Ted Cruz. Like, why are you just talk like a fucking normal human being? Why are you talking like that? I don't get it. And I don't like it. Okay. Side point though. I like how my side points are always like really angry bursts of shit. Now let's get to the substance. At the end, she's like, you know, we need a leader that does more prayer and not less. We need a leader that talks more to their imaginary friend instead of admitting we don't have imaginary friends. No, could you imagine this in any other context? So take away the entire, you know, context of religion from the world here for a second, and just imagine somebody said this about their literal imaginary friend. Like, they're like, hey, I have a friend named Chucky. You can't see him, but I talk to him. Hey, Chucky. Could you imagine Carly Fiorina? We should all spend more time talking to our imaginary friends, hey, Chucky, than not talking to them. People would go, oh, my God, straitjacket. Can we get security in here? Let's go. Thorazine, Seroquel, put her in a padded room. What's happening? That's weird. Doesn't make any sense. But since everybody, okay, let's, you can't criticize religion. So, okay, religion's here. We need to get on our knees and pray and say stuff to God. To do that more, not less. Any time you spend praying when you're in office and not substantively doing shit and focusing on real-world solutions is wasted time. Totally wasted time. That's as silly as saying, you know, people should do a Santeria fucking, you know, ceremony or a voodoo ceremony when We need more time to do voodoo ceremonies when we get elected. Put a skull in the corner of the room and sprinkle goat blood, and we'll all dance around the center of the Oval Office and speak to the fairies and the angels and the zombies. That's what you're saying, but just because you're using different words doesn't mean that's not what you're saying. Why is it that when it's the religion of the majority, everybody's like, oh, that makes sense. But if somebody were to say, we need to spend more time talking to Zeus and Thor, we need more time for the Greek gods and the Roman gods, people would say, this person is fucking Looney Tunes. But when it's your gods and your mommy and daddy's gods, oh, it's cool. No, it's cool. They're just going to talk to their imaginary friend. Back off. What are you, a bigot? You disagree with that? Why are you such a bigot? Gets to the real bigotry in a second. Now, imagine what she said there, because I'll give you her quote. People of faith make better leaders. People of faith make better leaders. Imagine that she said that about any other group. So that includes, okay, people of faith are better, so the people of different faiths, but the one who's left out? Atheists, agnostics, non-believers. So just, you know, that's why I call it casual bigotry. You say it and people are like, that's a pro-faith thing to say. No, it's also an anti-atheist thing to say. It's also an anti-agnostic thing to say. You're also saying, they suck. Just this group, blanketly dismiss them, but everybody else is great. Could you imagine a presidential candidate says today, you know, I think that black people should be dismissed. Nobody should vote for a black person. Everybody goes, that's racist. That's obviously racist. That's the most racist thing I've ever heard in my life. You know, I don't think Jews should get elected to office. I just don't think they make good leaders. So, no, I don't think they make worse leaders, period. But everybody says, you're an anti-Semitic bitch. You're crazy. How can you say that? That's a grotesque thing to say. But when it's an atheist, shh. None of us like him, so shut the fuck up. Nobody say anything. Okay, yeah, we all agree the atheists suck, right? Yeah, the atheists suck. Nobody defend him, right? Yeah, nobody defend him. Okay. That's the point we're at today. Casual bigotry against atheists. Fucking crickets. Where are the mainstream outlets? Yeah, did you just say people of faith make better leaders? How do you know? What does that even mean? What are you saying? Really? So, you know, do we have a recent atheist president we can point to? Oh, he actually did a good job. Look what he actually cared about, the shit happening on this earth. You don't have that example. So how can you say that? No, you say that because you're a fucking bigot. That's what it is. You're a bigot. Do you hear me clearly? You are bigoted, Carly Fiorina. Just because it's a group nobody talks about, nobody acknowledges the bigotry against them, doesn't mean you're not a bigot. You're clearly a bigot. Okay? And I'm sick of this. We gotta, you know, this is why atheists, agnostics, non-religious people, speak up! Speak up! You know, nobody's coming to save you. Nobody's coming to defend you. Nobody's gonna come in there and say, hey, that's, what the fuck, why would you say that? I can't run the country because I don't believe in your fucking magic voodoo nonsense. I don't believe in Harry Potter and the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. No, see, the thing that's most obnoxious about this is they're the ones with imaginary friends, and they're the ones who are saying, dismiss us, no questions asked, because they're so irrational and they don't make good leaders. But we make great leaders, especially when we're doing our stupid fucking voodoo ceremonies where we talk to our imaginary friends in the sky. The irony is overwhelming, and the bigotry is overwhelming. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll get into Donald Trump and his neo-Nazi nonsense. Stay right there. much. All right, we're back, guys. Time to go after Donald Trump. Alright. So Donald Trump last week went full fascist. He spoke about how we need a database of Muslims and how they should have special ID cards, which is only exactly like what Hitler did with the Jews and with the Star. And believe it or not, now he's gone the furthest that he's ever gone. So he retweeted a graphic that had some crime statistics. Now, let me tell you what it said. USA crime statistics for 2015. Blacks killed by whites, 2%. Killed by police, 1%. Whites killed by police, 3%. Whites killed by whites, 16%. Whites killed by blacks, 81%. Blacks killed by blacks, 97%. Good googly moogly. Look at what were those fucking blacks, man. God damn it, why won't you stop committing crimes, black people? Huh? This isn't a bigoted thing of me to say, but why would you stop committing crimes? Now, those numbers, needless to say, are totally made up. In fact, they're so made up that the source, the Crime Statistics Bureau in San Francisco, that isn't even real. So not only are the numbers made up themselves, the fucking bureau is made up. Immensely, immensely made up. I mean, that's all there is to say about those numbers. Now, in reality, just to give you some examples here, the FBI shows that 82% of white homicide victims were killed by other white people. Why the fuck won't white people stop committing crimes? Goddamn white people, 82% of white homicide victims were killed by other white people. I think it's something wrong with the culture. It must be the dads missing and the rock music and Marilyn Manson and blah, 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 fill in the blank. They say 15% of white homicide victims were killed by black people and 91% of black homicide victims were killed by other black people. So what does this show you? It shows you that, by and large, people kill those who are near them. Blacks live more around blacks. Whites live more around whites. And that's why, overwhelmingly, more white people kill white people, more black people kill black people. Not everything is 100% equal, that's obvious, but by and large, the trends are more related to who you live around. And then, naturally, there's 8,000 other factors that come into play here, poverty, job opportunity, value system, how you're raised, whatever. So there's a million and one things that go into it, but the real numbers show it's more people end up getting into arguments with / killing people who live near them. I know, radical. But where did Trump get his numbers from? Well, there were some people who decided to trace it back. They looked on Google, they looked elsewhere to see where that graphic came from. Because, again, it was totally made up, totally made up. Well, they were able to trace it back to a neo-Nazi Twitter account. That's the only other place that had released that graphic. They tweeted out that graphic. And then somebody had taken it, tweeted it at Donald Trump, saying, ha, see, the blacks got to stop committing crimes. What's wrong? What's wrong with your culture? Why should be more like white people? And then what does Donald Trump do? Retweets it. Neo-Nazi propaganda was tweeted at Trump, and he's like, totally true, retweet it. No, this is getting, it's getting, like, scary now, that should be it. What, could you imagine if Bernie Sanders retweeted, never mind, neo-Nazi propaganda, over, his campaign would be over, but even if it was communist propaganda, something like over, the media would talk about it for a week and a half straight, wall-to-wall coverage, say, this is going to tank his campaign. Is this going to tank his campaign? They pose it in the form of a question, and then that leads to people to it actually tanking the campaign. But with Donald Trump, he can say anything. He fucking launched his campaign by saying, Mexicans, they're rapists, they're criminals, I assume some are good people. And he just continued. He was able to just continue. Unbelievable. Like, he would talk on about Megyn Kelly and say, you know, maybe a certain part of her body was bleeding at the time. I mean, what the fuck, dude? And then you got stuff like this. Just openly advocating for Nazi-esque policies with a database for Muslims and identifying Muslims and build a wall, kick out all the undocumented immigrants, all of them, praising something that was called Operation Wetback. Back in the day when they did kick out a lot of undocumented immigrants and people died. And then now we got this, neo-Nazi stats. He can't. Guys, we got to – somebody please stop him. He's leading. He's this unstoppable force because – you know what it is? People are so tired of the establishment politicians. They're so tired of the fake, cheesy, sleazy politician way of talking that the anti-establishment people, even though he's a billionaire, but the way he talks, anti-establishment, that's why they're doing well. That's why he's doing well. And the thought of a guy who falls for neo-Nazi propaganda possibly becoming president of the United States of America is fucking horrifying because he would have his hand on that nuclear red button, okay, and he would have control of the most powerful military the world has ever known. I can't trust him with that. Okay, next. A white student union has formed in Illinois to fight back against Black Lives Matter. Addicting Info reports, the group posted a call to action for people to send in photos of people who are involved in the Black Lives Matter movement on campus in order to know who the anti-whites are. They also refer to Black Lives Matter as a terrorist organization in their original page description. So first they put it up. And it said, Illinois White Student Union, and that was taken down. Then they put up, I think, just Illinois White Student Union. And they wrote a post featuring a clip from the movie American History X, where Edward Norton says, "It's a bunch of people grabbing any excuse they can find to go and loot a store. Nothing more. Lincoln freed the slaves, what, like 130 years ago? How long does it take you to get your act together?" And the clip was titled, "Relevant to All Ferguson News." Now, they do, you know, the classic new white supremacist thing, which is you got to say, no, we're not really white supremacists. We're just, you know, we are white student union who stand up for white civil rights and stuff. You guys buying this? So they're doing that trick. But then all over the page, there were, like, hints of what's actually going on here. So let me show you a graphic from the page. All right, this says, "How to identify a racist?" And there's a picture that says, "I'm proud to be a strong black woman, not racist. I'm proud to be a Japanese American, not racist. I'm proud to be Native American, not racist. I'm proud to be Mexican, not racist. I'm proud to be Arabic, not racist." And then it says, "I'm proud to be white, racist." And so obviously they're mocking the idea, like, well, if everybody else can be proud of their heritage, why can't we be proud of our heritage? I'll tell you why. Because not everything is already equal. If things were already equal across the board, well, then nobody would have a problem with, you know, white people saying, "White pride!" But historically, what has that been linked to? Historically, it's been tied to the KKK. Historically, it's been tied to neo-Nazi groups. Now, you can pretend like that's not the case, but you're pretending, because that's not true. In fact, it has been tied to those groups. So, number one, historically, it's just different. When you talk black pride, it was to fight against. When you talk white pride, it was to dominate and segregate, and it was tied to hate and oftentimes terrorism. So, historically, it's just not true. But furthermore, when you're already the dominant power force and power structure in America, and you start screaming that we need more rights, we need to fight back against the people trying to tear us down, that doesn't end well. So we've seen that before, whether it was in Germany where they said, the Germanic people, we need to fight for our rights, the Aryan race, we need to fight for that. I always use this example because it parallels perfectly. If you have in Turkey, for example, people marching in the streets calling for Turkish pride, what's historically tied to that? Oh, I don't know. Why don't you ask the Armenians? Okay, it was tied to genocide. That's what it was tied to. When the dominant force gets hyper-nationalistic and into their own identity, that means exclusion for everybody else because they're the dominant force. But on the flip side, if you see a protest for the rights of Kurds in Turkey, well, that's perfectly fine and perfectly normal because they are an oppressed minority in Turkey, so they're fighting against the oppression for equality. That's the difference. And by the way, this idea that, you know, white people, they're just at a disadvantage because they're at a disadvantage. They can't ever, you know, say they're proud of anything. Not true. If somebody says Irish pride, nobody says you're racist. Somebody says Italian pride, nobody says you're racist. You know, as long as it's something that is not historically tied to overt racism and hate and bigotry and intolerance and terrorism, well, then everybody's fine with it. But that is historically to all those different things, and it is not, I repeat, it is not already equal. So since that's the case, and there's still work to do on the racial equality front, for you to say, hey, we started a 100-yard dash, white people ran 80 yards out in front, and then turned around and said, hey, black people, catch up, and then you start screaming in their face, white pride, well, then you're just a cunt, then you're just a prick. And finally, let me just say, guys, that's not to say that there aren't some times where people in the Black Lives Matter movement are wrong and go too far. Of course that happens. Of course that happens. I've seen it myself. I totally disagreed with the fucking pigs in a blanket, fry them like bacon chant, which was violent rhetoric. I disagreed with, there's a video recently of them shouting down students in a library who are minding their business and studying and calling them, you know, whatever, white curse words. I don't even know what words they use, or else I'd obviously say it. I curse all the time. But they were berating them in a library when they're studying. Okay, do I support that? No. In fact, I condemn that. I think it's horrible. I think it's stupid. I think it's terrible. But the overall point remains where they may go too far at times, and they may be wrong sometimes, but the overall movement to fight oppression and to, you know, end the drug war and to change policing so they don't, cops don't shoot to kill black people immediately, they're right on that. So the overall movement is correct to fight oppression, to fight injustice, whereas the white pride movement is the opposite. It's to perpetuate injustice, and it's to perpetuate oppression, and it's to further segregate and demonize and make the problem worse. That's the difference. The Daily News is straight hammering the NRA. They released some amazing covers over the past few weeks here. So there's one that says, Nowhere to Hide, Jihadi Wayne, talking about Wayne LaPierre, who, of course, is the head of the NRA, and they have a picture of him looking like a jihadist, which is hilarious. Then the other one was from a little while ago. It says, The NRA's Sick Jihad, comparing what they've done to, quite literally, jihadism. Now, why are they doing this? Because at first glance, this is something that the right is going to take advantage of and demonize and be like, I can't believe you made that comparison. My feelings are so hurt. I'm offended. Fire whoever did that. Now, of course, at other times, they'll say, First Amendment. I don't care if you're offended. Shut the fuck up. People are allowed to say whatever they want when it's people on their side. But when it's something like this, oh, watch how quickly they go, fire. Martin Bashir is the perfect example of that. The right loves to scream, free speech. So when the guy from Duck Dynasty said absurd things, don't fire him, can't fire him. Even if it's on a TV show, just don't fire him. Martin Bashir said something against Sarah Palin, fire him. So they flip-flop like nobody's business. But why is the Daily News doing this? Well, let me explain. Quote, more than 2,000 people on the FBI's terrorist watch list have not been allowed to get on planes in the U.S., but have been able to buy guns because the National Rifle Association and its allies in Congress have blocked legislation to close that loophole. Oh, God. They actually advocated for terrorists to be able to buy guns. They say the Government Accountability Office in 2013 and 2014, according to them, 94% of people on the terror watch list were able to buy the guns that they wanted, with 455 suspects buying weapons and just 30 denied as allowed under current laws. So we're talking about the gun show loophole here, where I believe it's 40% of all gun purchases in the U.S. have no background check associated with them whatsoever. So you can be a manic depressive, you can be severely bipolar, have severe depression, or have paranoid schizophrenia, or have a laundry list of former felonies on your record. Or you could be a terrorist, and you walk in, boom, buy your weapon, no questions asked, get the fuck out of there, and then use it! And then use it! This is the system we want in the U.S.? Guys, you can be in favor of the Second Amendment and not want gun anarchy, which is effectively what we have today. And that's why they're slamming Wayne LaPierre for this. Because, Wayne, you're just wrong. And your move does endanger Americans. Who the fuck can argue in good faith, hey, I want terrorists to be able to buy guns? Well, the policies you push for have made that the case. So if you're against that, well, you know, be a decent person and come out and say, you know what, I'm for a universal background check, but you won't do it. Why? Because the leadership of the NRA takes funding from gun manufacturers, and the gun manufacturers say, no laws against us, none whatsoever. We don't care, just none, because it's all about profits to them. That's the problem, and this is something that has to stop. Over 90% of the American people say do a universal background check. And if our democracy was functioning like a democracy and not an oligarchy, we would have already had that. But now it's time to call out the people who get in the way and prevent common sense reform. All right, next. I got 2 left and 9 minutes. I think I can make that work. What do you guys think? Raw Story is reporting that an Oregon libertarian group is suing because the University of Oregon refused to sponsor a gun giveaway that they were doing. They say, quote, Young Americans for Liberty staged the event on Friday to protest a campus policy banning concealed firearms. 3 guns were offered as grand prizes to winners of a poker tournament. After the University of Oregon student government refused to pay for the event, Young Americans for Liberty asked the conservative group Foundation for Individual Rights in Education, or FIRE is the acronym, to step in. So they argued that not funding this gun giveaway was a violation of the libertarian group's First Amendment rights. That's the most absurd thing I've ever heard in my life. Think about how stupid that is. So unless they are funded by the University of Oregon, so unless there's government funding for their free speech, well, then you're violating their free speech. Let's say they win. Shit, I'm going to get a government grant for what I do immediately. Are you violating my free speech rights by not having the government pay me when I speak? Well, I mean, you're violating my civil liberties. You're violating my rights. You're violating the Constitution. Obviously, the taxpayer should have to fund my free speech. No, you idiots. The idea of free speech is that the government cannot lock you up for, you know, expressing opinions and expressing your beliefs. There are a few exceptions, of course, you know, no libel, no slander, and no direct threats of violence. But outside of that, yeah, whatever. Also, we're absolutists on that front. But that doesn't mean that the government has to fund you. It does not mean that the government has to fund you. That's insanity. Everybody would say, give me a check. I said I have an opinion on the fucking Seahawks. I mean, that's utter craziness. And remember, we've not only seen this argument, you know, in this put forth in this way, we've seen it put forth as a Second Amendment argument, too. I think it was some NRA spokespeople came out, and they said, if the government doesn't pay for my gun, you're violating my Second Amendment rights. Are you fucking serious? So now the government needs to buy everybody guns, or else that's a violation of the Second Amendment right. Well, what the fuck does the Second Amendment say? It says, a well-regulated militia has the right to bear arms, And the arms at the time, of course, were fucking muskets, which take an hour and a half to reload. And it's, again, well-regulated militia. The word regulated is right in there. So are you in a militia? No. Is it a musket? No. So, okay, if you really want to do... And these are the guys who say they believe in the literalist interpretation, where original intent, guys, there's your original intent. But then what would they say? Well, that's on that amendment, not original intent. Oh, okay, so you just flip-flop based on whatever the fuck your political ideology is. And again, that doesn't mean that the government has to pay for your gun. That's fucking silliness. You're dense if you believe that. Clearly what it means is, you can have a gun if you're in a well-regulated militia and it was muskets. But to further, expand that conversation, if you read the arguments the Founding Fathers had on the Second Amendment, what it was really about was, number one, standing armies. So whenever, you had the troops home and they're not at war, they're allowed to keep their guns. So they're not technically a standing army, but they get to have their guns. Okay. And the other one was to preserve slave patrols. So it was used as a bargaining chip to get Virginia to be part of the U.S. They were having reservations. They weren't sure. It was back during the times of the Articles of Confederation. And they're like, okay, no, let's... So in order to get Virginia in this thing, we got to give them something. What they want is the ability to form slave patrols and have guns so they can stop their slaves from escaping north. Because at the time, Virginia was majority slave state, and they knew that if they became part of the U.S., the slaves would want to run and go to the free north immediately. So what did they do? Hey, put an amendment in there that allows us to have guns and do slave patrols, well-regulated militias, and then we'll be able to fight the slaves if they try to escape. And with that, then they said, okay, fine, we'll join. So it was really about preserving slavery and no standing armies. That was the real intent of the Second Amendment. But it's been twisted so that people believe, the government needs to pay me to have whatever gun I want. See, this is the amazing thing. The guys who claim the most to care about the original intent are the ones who know the least about it and don't believe in it. Okay. Next. And final. The University of Ottawa is ending its free yoga classes, which they've done for 7 years, in order to avoid cultural appropriation. So the Ottawa Sun reports, quote, the student government-operated center for students with disabilities were the ones who pulled the plug on the classes. They said, while yoga is a really great idea and accessible and great for students, there are cultural issues of implication involved in the practice. They argue that yoga originally sprang from cultures that have, quote, experienced oppression, cultural genocide, and diasporas due to colonialism and Western supremacy. We need to be mindful of this and how we express ourselves while practicing yoga. Now, the article here seemed to indicate that there was a grand total of one complaint where somebody said, hey, that's cultural appropriation. Like, shut it down. People are mad. Shut it down. Really? So I've spoken about this issue before, but I want to bring it up again today because I think it's important to make this point. All right. And to be clear, I think the overwhelming majority of liberals are against closing this because it seemed to be great and there was only one complaint. But liberals and progressives need to pick. And what I mean by that is you can either believe in cultural appropriation being a problem, or you can believe that multiculturalism is the way to go. They're contradictory. You can't have them both. And oftentimes people voice this belief that both are good. Yeah, I believe in multiculturalism, but oh my God, that person just culturally appropriated those people. Yeah, but cultural appropriation is kind of the goal of multiculturalism, where you want white culture, for example, to feel the influence of black culture so that we get closer together by sharing cultural practices and sharing, different kinds of food that were only in one community or the other for the longest time. And when you start meshing the cultures together and you start appreciating each other's cultures, there's your multiculturalism. It doesn't mean that we need segregation amongst cultures all in the same place. It's fine if you have that and you mutually respect each other and you're all abiding by civil liberties and rights and stuff. But what actually is the end goal of something like multiculturalism is for all of us to kind of have our cultures melt together in the melting pot of the United States of America. So you can't say, I believe in multiculturalism, but then get mad when people want to do something that's from another culture, because that doesn't make sense. You have to pick. Either you want the cultural appropriation, so segregate the cultures. We're not allowed to share or love each other at all. Or you say multiculturalism, let's all share, let's all, you know, trade practices, and we're all in this together. You got to pick one or the other. I, for one, believe wholeheartedly in multiculturalism, and I don't believe in cultural appropriation, because, you know, that's something that seems to me to be the left going way too far, where they get concerned about things that don't make sense, and they lose focus of what the left is usually about, which is protecting people's rights and being against injustice everywhere. All right, guys, I'm out of time. I love you. We'll see you tomorrow. Peace.